columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Just like I do at 1:58 when I say KKFN, KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver.
I'm just sitting there waiting. I'm like, when is he going to throw it in here? He's going, and I'm waiting for it. How's he going to go into it? He goes, that was nice. Good job. I can appreciate that.
Wow. We take these baby steps, and I think, you know, this is not so much a baby step, but that last conversation that we just had, that there is a specific firm date that these student athletes will be able to return to campus and start to do voluntary workouts. Again, where we were just 30 days ago, this seems like a massive win that we should be, celebrating here.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, anything, steps in the right direction is what we're looking for. Well, we're looking for good news. We're looking for getting back to normalcy. I think everybody's ready for that. And so hopefully we can continue to do it and take some baby steps here and keep everybody safe and healthy along the way. But I think everybody's ready to get back to, you know, their lives and get back to doing what we love to do and just getting out and doing things and going to work and all of those things. So, steps in that direction are good signs, and we're certainly seeing some of that momentum, especially when it comes to, you know, seeing sports again.
Yeah, we're going to get there. We're going to get there. It's just a matter of the pace we get there and what it looks like when we do get it back, and how far we are from that point to where it used to be. We just don't know yet, as you heard him sort of preface throughout his answers.
Right.
Like, we just don't know. We're watching, we're listening, we're learning, but we're optimistic at the same time. So good conversation. We appreciate him dropping by. Rick George, the AD at CU, and man, I would love to get back up to Boulder and watch a Pac-12 football game.
Yeah, I would too. They got a great stadium there.
They do. It's
great facilities, great stadium, and
just great
absolutely.
Game day environment.
Yeah.
Like, man, you got the mountains there and the big old. I guess I'll call it a quad to cook out and have these tailgates. And you know, the last time I was there, unfortunately, they blew like a 23-0 lead to Oregon State. And then I don't think won a game the rest of the season. But we can be optimistic on, you know, where.
But.
The direction of that the program's going.
I was going to ask him about the Mel Tucker and the new coach, in that situation, but I just felt like that probably was not the right time to ask those questions.
And that was pretty good wisdom used on your part.
Yeah, good. I thought about it, though. I did.
Hey, Rick, we don't know if you've been asked about Mel Tucker, but Midnight Mel, where are you at with Midnight Mel?
It wasn't going to be really about Mel, but just kind of the transition and what that process was like and how difficult that process was. That was more of what it was going to be. Wasn't going to just be specifically about Mel, but kind of the transition and how that's gone and how it happened so sudden. And now with everything else that we're dealing with, you know, obviously it makes it more difficult.
Yeah. Yep. No, for sure. And that's, I mean, you talk about, my goodness, you know, we talk about the Broncos and, you know, Pat Shurmur installing a new offense with, you know, some young players.
I wasn't going to ask him the Bill Polian question. Well, Bill, I mean, you've been on record talking about how bad you thought Lamar Jackson was going to stink. You're a Hall of Fame, you know, GM evaluator. I mean, how'd you get that one wrong, buddy? Yeah, that was your question to Bill Polian. It's like, oh, that's the last time Bill's coming on. Holy cow, Zach, thanks for that one, man.
Come on.
We used to have a good relationship with the Hall of Famer, but after that question, he's like, done with Stokely and Zach.
Oh, my goodness.
Thanks for that one, Zach.
Stop.
Joking.
All right.
I love it. I'm full
look,
of it.
I was as delicate as I possibly could be while still asking a question.
You did good. It was a very fair question, and you worded it really well, so it was all good.
All right. By the way, we're talking about, you know, reopening, you know, of college sports and, you know, everything at CU and our conversation with Rick George. The NFL is opening back up too, and this was a memo that was sent yesterday, and the memo sent Thursday to all the teams. Commissioner Goodell has advised teams that the next phase of team facility reopening is. It's here. It's Monday, June 1st. On that day, quote, clubs may reopen ticket offices, retail shops, and other customer-facing facilities as long as the operation of such facilities fully complies with state and local regulation. Employees of these operations will count toward the max number of persons allowed at the facility, which is no more than half of all the staff, with a maximum of 75 total people. The league also, quote, expects that next week clubs will be permitted to include members of their coaching staffs among the employees permitted to resume work in the club facilities, end quote. So the NFL is moving in this direction, too, because, you know, right now no coaches are permitted at the team facilities.
Right.
Because not all facilities are able to open. So Goodell also explained that the league offices continue to work with the NFL Players Association, quote, on developing protocols that will allow at least some players to return to your facilities on a limited basis prior to the conclusion of the off-season program, end quote. So coaches could be coming back. Or coaches are coming back. Players could be coming back very soon. And here we go.
Yeah, that's good news. We'll see what it looks like. You know, when can we get everybody back in the facility, and when does that happen? And it probably won't happen until hopefully it'll happen at training camp. That's kind of what I'm hoping for, is by that time we'll be able to have everybody back rocking and rolling again. We'll be able to be out there. I really don't see that you're going to be able to have all the players back in the facility in every state and ready to go before, you know, July, before training camp opens. I just don't see that happening. Do you?
I think I do.
You do? So that would be here. I mean, you got to consider the off-season program usually ends by the end of this month somewhere, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think by the end of the month they'll be able to have 75, 90 players in there, full staff?
So by the end
coaching, coaches, players, administrators, everybody back in the building. Maybe not all of them, but coaches, players back in the building, like full team back in the building.
I
don't see that happening.
What's the date you're going to give me here?
Well, you got to the end of the month, end of June.
And
I mean, that's it, really.
Oh,
right?
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you before. End of June.
I said it pretty slowly and pretty clearly that training camp starts at end of July, and you have about a month off for the players, so you got till end of June.
I thought that you. I gotta tell you, you are a little bit spicy today.
Am I? Got a little cayenne pepper.
You got a little Texas Pete in you today.
I'm in a good mood. I'm feeling good.
By the way,
really? Well, yes. Hey, if I'm coming across a little bit rude to you today, I apologize. How about that?
Stokely,
am I coming across rude?
A bleep today.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That's hey. You know what, Zach? I apologize then.
No. There's no need to apologize.
This
is how we get down here.
This is how we get down. Some people think it's rude. My wife even calls me out on it, you know, sometimes, and says, stop being so rude to Zach. And, you know, poor Zach, you're so mean to him. And I'm like, what?
I love that Lana's in my corner.
Yes.
Like
oh,
this.
Yeah. 1,000% in your corner. 1,050% in your corner.
Oh, my goodness. I may have Carson, too. I may have Carson and Lana.
Carson, yeah, depends on if I get him an icy or not. You know?
Right.
So if I get him an icy, he's in my corner. If not, then he's in yours. So there you go.
Originally, when you said it, I thought you meant by training camp. So I'll agree with you. By the end of this month, you know, going back to the normal capacity, no, I can't see it. But by the time that training camp kicks off,
okay,
I do believe we can get there, because there's another month in between there.
Right. Yeah, so we have 2 months before training camp starts, almost officially 2 months.
Which
here.
Is crazy, isn't it? This offseason,
yeah.
I mean, I know I shouldn't say this, but it for what we do, it's kind of been flying, it feels like. I have this conversation with our producer, Stephen Priest, it feels like once a week, where, you know, and Tyler said this on one of our team meetings, that, like, I'm waiting for the day that it comes in and it gets just arduous. Where it's just so tough because there's been no sports, but it hasn't really felt like that at all. We just kind of been cruising along and having fun and, you know, coming up with a plan every day and, you know, getting after it.
Yeah, it really has flown by. But you look at the situation and, man, I sure hope by the time late July comes that everybody's going to be able to get it back on the football field, because if not, I mean, football teams have got to have – we got to have training camp.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have some practice time. You're going to have 90 guys in that facility. That's just the way it's got to be. Because if you don't have this type of practice time now, and you can't get together, and you can't do it, and you're not able to do it in certain states, or and then they're not going to let certain states do it, you're going to have contingency plans, and teams are going to have to get together and be able to practice and work and have a couple preseason games and have 3-4 weeks of practice to get ready for the football season, and because we've had no off season. So you can't just all of a sudden say we're going to go practice for a week and play. It's just, you just can't do that.
No.
So, you know, the NFL season wants to go. You're going to have training camp. You're going to have 90 guys and in a facility, being able to practice, you know, doing all those types of things. If not, then you're not going to be able to play football. At least you're not going to be able to start it on time.
Well, I believe they are going to start on time. I'm judging by the temperature of the day when it comes to this stuff, the restrictions that are being loosened, and the way that the NFL has operated up to this point. They haven't really concerned themselves with any public perception or criticism. So I could see it happening in a couple months from now. Wouldn't happen today, nor should it, but in a couple months from now, I could see it happening. You know, hopefully we can kind of, you know, and maybe no fans, you know, out of training camp. I could see that scenario. I could see them shutting down joint practices, by the way. I could see them saying, you know, let's all just stay in place and you're going to practice amongst yourselves. We're not going to cross over states and bring people from California to Colorado or people from Chicago to Colorado or vice versa. I could see that, but I do believe we'll get back. And shout out to Bearcat Jim. He just texted us, said, we're all in your corner, Zach. When it comes to going head to head with you, and I appreciate that.
Okay. Bearcat Jim's about to get that wrath on the golf course here in about an hour. Okay,
I'm rooting for you, Bearcat Jim. You treat Stokely today on the golf course like your Bearcat Cats treat East Carolina.
Oh, that ain't gonna happen. I'm gonna treat Bearcat Jim like Ohio State treated him.
Oh, he doesn't like that very much. All right, you and I went back and looked at another football game. We're trying to figure out how to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. So we've been tasked here at the Fan to step inside the Fan film room. And this week, we looked at Patrick Mahomes' first loss of his NFL career. There's only been 8 of them, believe it or not, in 2-plus seasons. We looked at his first loss against the New England Patriots, which I believe was Week 6 of 2018. And this morning, you and I looked at Week 11, 2018. It's one of the most fascinating football games I've ever watched in my entire life. For my money, it's one of the most, it's a top five. I'm not going to say it's number one because I know I'm forgetting other all-time entertaining games. But I think I can safely say it's one of the five most entertaining Monday Night Football games in the history of Monday Night Football. It is the highest scoring game in the history of Monday Night Football. After 273 Monday Night Football games, no game ever scored as high as this one. It was Week 11. The Rams hosting the Kansas City Chiefs, and I know a lot of NFL fans, if not all, remember this Monday night.
Yeah, it was an instant classic, a shootout of epic proportions, and it was a back and forth game. And once again, you know, if you're looking at, hey, how do you beat Patrick Mahomes? Well, the first game we went to was the Patriots game. Well, that game was on the road. This game was also on the road, not in Kansas City. Not at home. And Rams early on, look, they got up early. They were up 13-0 like that. Boom. First couple drives, 13-0. Make the Chiefs play from behind. Now, the game obviously took a much bigger turn there because a lot of points were scored, but they got up early on the Chiefs. They didn't quite run the ball as effectively as the Patriots did in Patrick Mahomes' first loss. You know, the Patriots established a run and continued to run the football. The Rams didn't do that. Jared Goff was special.
He was.
That's what you look at. Jared Goff was special. I mean, when you look at his stats, 31 for 49, 413 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions.
It's the best game he's ever played.
Right. I mean, he was unbelievable that game, and he hasn't, you know, seen numbers like that since. But that was a special game, and that's, you know, that's why you look at these types of games and you say, okay, that's why they paid him the money that they paid him. And he was special. The Chiefs are also just off. They were off. When you look at early in the football game, Zach, and you look at all the penalties that they were getting.
Oh, my gosh.
They must have had five, six, seven, eight penalties in the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yep.
I'm talking about the first 10 minutes of the game.
And they finished with 13 for 135 yards and penalty yards.
Yes. So, you know, once again, you know, making mistakes, right? Them kind of helping you out a little bit. I think like they did when they played the Patriots. And also, you have the same thing. You have the same recipe here, Zach, when you look at Patrick Mahomes. He threw it to the other football team.
Yep.
And he did it three times in this game. Against the Patriots, he did it two times. This game, he did it three times. So can you get him to make some mistakes? He did it against the Patriots. They lost. He did it in this game in the tune of three interceptions. Now he had six touchdowns, 478 yards. These numbers were just insane. And but he did have those three interceptions. So get turnovers. Hopefully they make some mistakes, right? Just penalties. I mean, they had early in the game, they had the Rams 3rd and 11. Rams were driving in the red zone, but you feel good about your situation on 3rd and 11, holding the field goal. What happens? D4 jumps offside. 3rd and 6, they convert. Next play, the Chiefs jump offsides again. So 2 out of 3 plays, their defensive linemen are just jumping offsides. And that they had illegal hands of the face, illegal contact, pass interference. I mean, they were getting all holding. They were getting all kind of just self-inflicted calls against themselves that really put them in tough situations. And now this game was great. Also, what happened for the Rams late in that football game, the Chiefs had a game-sealing interception. Game-sealing interception that went right through the cornerback's hands, and I believe it was Orlando Scandrick, his hands.
Yep, you're on.
Would have sealed the game for the Chiefs, and he just dropped it. He just dropped it. And then the Rams, what did they do? Boom, boom, boom. And they made them pay for it, and they win that football game. So you look at what has to happen. You got to get a little lucky. Patrick Mahomes has to be off. You got to get some turnovers. And somebody's got to play special for you. And in this game, it was Jared Goff. He was special. He had an unbelievable game.
And Stoke, it wasn't just him. It was Aaron Donald on the defensive side of the ball, who in the last 2 minutes of the second quarter – has a strip sack that this cat, I'm going to try to say this name, Imukam, Aaron Donald blows by his guy and strip sacks Jared Goff, or excuse me, Patrick Mahomes, and this cat runs it to the house for a scoop and score. That was with under 2 minutes left in the first half. Within the first 2 minutes of the second half, Aaron Donald has another strip sack. So multiple strip sacks from Aaron Donald. He was just a man possessed. And in order to slow down Kansas City's offense, yeah, you're going to have to score points. And we've talked about that. Your offense is going to have to score. Maybe not the same way that the Rams did that day, scoring 54 points.
Right.
This is the third highest NFL game of all time in terms of a score.
Wow.
Yeah, believe it or not, back in 1966, I believe, the Redskins put 72 on the New York Giants. Hard to imagine how that happened in 1966.
Wow. 54-51 final in this one, remember the final score.
54-51, unbelievable. But Jared Goff played special, and you're going to have to score points. That goes without saying. But Aaron Donald, Von Miller needs to be, or Bradley Chubb at this point, needs to be as impactful as Von Miller, or as Aaron Donald was in this game. Because they don't win the game without Aaron Donald. They don't win the game without Jared Goff. They don't win the game without being +3 in the turnover margin.
That's right.
You know, so you need to be special.
Yes, and you're right. I mean, look, not only did Mahomes throw, you know, the three interceptions, they got the two fumbles also. So they got five turnovers, the Rams did, and they did give the ball up two times also, but +3 turnover differential certainly helps.
Yeah.
And even then, with Jared Goff having his best game in his career and playing lights out, they still had to get lucky, and the ball still had to go right through the DB's hands with under 2 minutes left for the Rams to go down and win the football game. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, that's what I've noticed here the last couple, the first two games of Patrick Mahomes' career that he has lost, the Patriots game and this game, is – you know, you're going to have, they're going to have to make some mistakes. Mahomes is, you're going to have to force them into mistakes, and they'll have to make some mistakes. And on top of it, look, you just got to get fortunate. You got to be fortunate. And when you look at the Rams, they were very fortunate. Everything going their way. They jumped out to an early lead. They won the turnover battle, and still they had to have a Chiefs guy just drop a wide open interception and not haul it in. So, It's tough. First two games, that's the way I look at it, man. These guys, they're never out of a game, and you're going to have to make some special plays and some, like you said, Aaron Donald was great. We're going to need Vaughn and Chubb. Somebody's going to have to be getting after Patrick Mahomes. We need some sack fumbles. Offensively, is it Drew Lock? Is it Cortland Sutton? Is it the running game? Somebody's going to have to be special.
Yeah, and this cat, Amukam, he had the scoop and score from the Aaron Donald strip sack. In the second half, he has a pick six. How many times in an NFL game ever has a defensive player scored two touchdowns in a game? I'd venture to say the list is like 10. It just doesn't happen.
I'd say it's more than 10. But
it could be. But you know,
I don't want to be mean to you today.
Well, it's too late for that here.
Okay.
So,
well, I might as well continue. Hey, it's a lot more than 10. Zach, that was dumb.
There you go.
There you go.
But I'll say this. It's really a question. Is this who the Broncos are trying to be? Are they trying to be the firepower team that can stand in the middle of the ring and trade punches with Tyson? Like, is that their strategy here, the way that John Elway is building this football team?
Well, I think they're just trying to build a good football team. You know, I mean, you look at the way he's constructing it. Obviously, yes, we got to score points, okay? So we need to upgrade these weapons offensively. Check, he's done that. But it's not like all of a sudden we think we're going to throw the ball all the time and we're just going to air it out. No, we just signed Melvin Gordon to a 2-year, $16 million deal with 9 of it this year guaranteed, or 13 guaranteed, 9 this year he's making. So, yeah, we're going to run the football also. He just wants a well-rounded football team. We haven't ignored the defense. We haven't done that at all. And if you think that this, you know, Zach, you've been saying that they're constructing this team to beat Kansas City. Right.
Well, they've had Kansas City's name coming out of their mouth repeatedly.
Well, because there's a reason why. Kansas City's Super Bowl champs. Kansas City's won the division. Kansas City has owned the Broncos. So, yeah, you're going to talk about your neighbor that has dominated you the most, but you don't build your team just to beat your neighbor. Okay? That's foolish. You build your team to be a really good football team to win a championship. And, you know, yeah, you have them in the back of your mind because they're your neighbor. But at the same time, you don't go out of your way just for that one football team.
Do you believe that the Denver Broncos, I'm going to ask you this question again because it's been a couple of weeks. Okay. Do you believe John Elway selects KJ Hamler in the second round and becomes the seventh team in the history of the National Football League draft to go receiver or receiver round one and round two if they weren't in the same division as the Kansas City Chiefs?
Let me think about it. Yes.
No.
Zach.
No.
I mean,
no.
that pick wasn't for the Chiefs,
yes,
Zach.
What they've designed.
Why? Why is it for the Chiefs? Tell me why that pick is.
They're looking for more speed. They're looking for a lid lifter. They're looking for someone to combat the firepower of Kansas City.
Of course they're looking for more speed, but that doesn't mean that they're looking for more speed because of Kansas City. They're looking for more speed because we need a better offense. We need more explosiveness. Zach, if they're building this team to beat the Chiefs, guess what they would have done? Guess what they would have done?
Drafted Henry Ruggs or moved up for Henry Ruggs.
No, forget Henry Ruggs. No, stop. No. They would have gone and signed another cornerback or two. They would have gone out there and got another cornerback or two.
Wait, they can go out and draft cornerbacks?
They could have drafted a cornerback in the second round. They should have. And they should have drafted an offensive lineman, too, in the second round, the guy from Houston also that
moved up there and grabbed him, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, they would have gone out and they would have said, well, look at Kansas City's high-powered offense. Look at all these weapons, these receivers. We got to go out and get a couple more DBs. And we got to – yeah, we got Boye, but we need more than that. We got to compete against the Chiefs. Rest my case.
Your case isn't arrested. Your case is not arrested. Your case is
that one felt good.
Wide
that
awake.
One felt good,
your case
Zach.
Is not
I got you on that
it's
one.
Wide
I got
awake.
You
it's,
on that one. That feels good on a Friday.
No. Your case is not at rest,
baby. Head to the weekend on a high note.
I'll tell you, I might put out a poll for our fans here on this one because we've been disagreeing on this one for over a month now. So
I just won it right there.
You did not win anything. You didn't win anything.
If it's all about the Chiefs and beating the Chiefs and stopping the Chiefs and outscoring the Chiefs and all these things, then there would have been a lot more point of emphasis on adding more depth to the secondary, which they've pretty much ignored the other side of A.J. Boye. And you could say that we could use two cornerbacks if it's about defending the Chiefs.
All right. All right. Yesterday, we had a conversation about Von Miller. Because the folks at Pro Football Focus believe that they revealed the reason why he had such a forgettable 2019. And there was some really good follow-up questions from our listeners that we will get to next. We had a conversation yesterday about Von Miller, and it was in relation to... really a conversation that we saw on social media with the folks at a Pro Football Focus who, you know, I don't understand, like, the hate that Pro Football Focus gets. It's a tool. If you're treating it like the end-all be-all, then I think you're putting a magnifying glass over it. It's just another piece of information and context.
Yeah.
I just, you know, like our guy Mark in the morning, like, hates Pro Football Focus. Like, almost like if Pro Football Focus says something that he agrees with, it almost like goes against his, like, football code, his man 101 code.
Oh.
But I choose to look at it, just take it for what it is. Like other analytics. You know, the analytics say, go for it here on fourth down. Well, you know, what does my gut tell me? You know, you can use the numbers to weigh in, but not bring down the ultimate judgment. So, And I think you're the same way, right, with PFF?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like some of the things they have. Some of them I'll just ignore them. And, but I definitely liked how they broke down Von, and because I was confused by those stats that they were giving, and it just didn't seem like, you know, oh, yeah, he's leading, you know, he's top three in pressures or whatever it was, and I just didn't see it. And so I just didn't quite understand where they were coming up with these stats when I wasn't seeing it.
Right. And the conversation that you're referring to is one that we heard yesterday, and this is what it sounded like.
Sam, we have a great question from one of the astute listeners here at the PFF NFL podcast. Why did Von Miller, despite having 77 pressures, only have a career-worst 71.4 pass rushing grade last season?
It's a great question, and there's essentially three reasons for it, right? Pressure stayed the same, but the number of decisive wins dropped down massively. So about 15 fewer plus one or plus 1.5 wins when it comes to pass rushing. That's a big drop. Secondly, unblocked cleanup pursuit pressures, the kind of pressures that aren't really that impressive. They're not real wins. They shot up 12 percentage points in terms of how much of his pressures were that variety. And lastly, BDs. Wins at the line of scrimmage that don't get a chance to become pressure down. 10 or 12 of those fewer than the previous 2 years. Those three things together amount to about a 10-point drop in grades.
All right, so interesting stuff there. The first bullet point, decisive wins at the line of scrimmage are down. Pressures that are technically pressures but are classified as unimpressive pressures, never really a factor. You're in the frame, but never really a factor. Those are way up, according to PFF. And then he also said wins at the line of scrimmage that don't become pressures are also way up. So all in all, you know, it makes sense. It really, you know, and someone chimed in yesterday and said, if you need the folks at PFF to tell you that Von Miller had, you know, a down year or down 2 years, then, you know, you're misguided, or however they put it. No, we've been talking about it for quite some time, for a couple years, with you specifically and me being as critical as it warranted in the 2019 season. It was the worst season of Von Miller's career, and that's really not really debatable, where he's been healthy anyway. So we had some follow-up questions from our listeners. I want to bounce off a couple of them here. One was very simple. Who would you rather have for the next three seasons? Shaq Barrett or Von Miller? Now, I know it's not a fair question because it's not apples to apples. They drafted Bradley Chubb and Shaq wanted to start. I'm not one of these guys that say, you know, Elway's an idiot for letting Shaq. No, he wanted to start and he was going to go bet on himself and he did and he cashed in. But
you're not going to pay a situational, you know, third pass rusher after just, you know, getting a first round pick. You're not going to pay that guy $5 million plus incentives.
It just wouldn't make sense since you invested in it already. It'd be like drafting a wide receiver in the first round, then doing it again in the second.
It's also like drafting a tackle a few years ago in the first round, paying Juwan James a ton of money and paying Elijah Wilkinson, your third tackle, a bunch of money, then going out and get Jason Peters and paying him, $5-6 million bucks plus incentives. same type of thing, right? Touché?
I like that.
I like yours. I like yours too. I caught it. I was just ready to go into mine.
I know you were.
Similar minds think alike on that one,
seriously,
right?
Seriously, I thought you were just going to go right by it because you weren't all the way paying attention. But you were locked into it. But if all things were equal here, I'm asking just a hypothetical question.
Okay.
If for the next three seasons, would you rather have Shaq Barrett or Von Miller?
I'll go with the younger football player, and I'd take probably Shaq Barrett.
You would.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're talking about for three seasons now.
Yep.
You're not talking about for 1 year. Shaq led the NFL in sacks last year.
He did. It's unbelievable.
So I'm going off the more the here than now. I'm not going off the history, right? You go off of what you see most recently, and that was Shaq Barrett having an unbelievable year and having more sacks than Von ever had in a season. And
that's so crazy.
And Von, you know, looks like he's trending in the other direction. That's just the way it looks. So I think it's pretty easy answer. I don't even think it should be difficult.
Yeah.
It's crazy saying it, though. I feel a little bit crazy saying it, but then once I talk myself through it, it's pretty simple, pretty easy. It's got to be Shaq Barrett.
No,
it has to be.
No, it doesn't have to be.
When I talk through it, it has to be. To me. It just makes more and more sense.
I think I'd still go with Von.
Explain.
For the reason that I have a way, way bigger track record for success. All right? The guy still should be in his prime for at least two of the next 3 years. You're getting Bradley Chubb back, and he's on the other edge. That's a factor that was there this past year. Let me ask you a question. Is Shaq Barrett a great player?
Zach, I'm still waiting for you. I'm still waiting for your answer. So you're going with Von? That was the best that you had? It sounded like you were trying to talk yourself into it. And then now it sounds like you're trying to wiggle out and throw some kind of question at me, but I'm not finished with this other conversation. Look, I'm Zach.
Von's 30. Boy, he's got to play a 31, 32, and 33 in this scenario.
Okay, well, just hear me through here.
I'm going with Von still.
Hear me through. That's fine. Hear me through here, Zach. We've seen the last couple years. It just hasn't been good enough from Von. I know a couple years ago he was double-digit sacks and had the 14 or so, and then this year we saw a real decrease in his play. But we've been seeing that on film. And that year where he had the 14 or whatever, that was, you know, that started off with the three and a half sacks against, say, Seattle.
Yep.
And so that's how he started the season. And then after that, you know, you saw one other game where he had multiple sacks, but a lot of inactivity from Von. We saw the Raiders game where he didn't register in the stat book. We saw this year, was it the Chiefs game?
Yeah, Kansas City.
Didn't register in the stat books, Zach.
Yeah.
So where is his play going? It's not improving. It's not. And those are the facts. And that's, you know, that's my eyes telling me. That's the stats telling me. That's John Elway. That's Vic Fangio. All of these people are telling me this. And so you want me to pick a guy that's kind of been going in the wrong direction in his career here and over a guy that is at the top of his pinnacle right now and is playing as good as anybody played last year on the defensive line and sacking the quarterback, the best in the league last year, and almost had 20 sacks. And you want me to you want me to take Von over that guy? I can't do it. And so you could put anybody's names there. And this last year, and you show me the stats against Von, and you put the and forget the name, Shaq Barrett, I'm taking that guy. You want to change.
You're making a lot of sense. You are. You're making a lot of sense. Von Miller. But
you're going. Let me help you out here.
No, because I don't need.
Yeah,
help.
You do.
No, you do.
You're stuttering a lot, and you're just thinking, and you're backtracking. You're about to beep Evans
Von
here.
Miller
I can feel it.
Is an all-time
I got you
great
in the ropes.
Player who is still in his prime and had a really down season. You want to know who else had a down season that I would not bet against in 2020?
Oh,
Khalil Mack. The guy won the Defensive Player of the Year. He shows up in Chicago in 2018 and is an absolute game wrecker. For whatever reason, don't know. New defense, new coach, being asked to do something different. He was not the same Khalil Mack. He's only 2 years younger than Von. Is Khalil
2 Mack... 2 years is a lot in the NFL, though, by the way.
Well, just saying that.
Go
okay,
ahead.
That's fine. So do I think that this is going to be Khalil Mack moving forward? No, I don't. I think he could go win Defensive Player of the Year this year. Von Miller in year number 2 in Vic's defense with a healthy Bradley Chubb coming off the other edge and not a guy that you hadn't heard of before training camp started. And Malik Reed, who, I don't know, got to quarterback 2 or 3 times. I think that's a big factor. And here's what I'm betting on here. I'm betting on greatness, to return to greatness while still in the window of his prime, because there was factors that were working against Von. Now, I told you yesterday he did need more oomph, and the more I thought about it, especially as it pertains to Kansas City, because his performances against Kansas City for years now have been so far below average, it's not even funny. He did get to Mahomes in the second of the 2 games last year for the first time, literally registered a sack for the first time against the Chiefs in a couple of years. So... But there, so I do agree he needs more off, but if you're asking me to bet on the next 3 years, I will bet on the longer track record of greatness as opposed to, who I think, a guy who's a really good player in Shaq Barrett who had a great season. And I just trust the sample of Von more. I trust the factors will fall back into place. It won't be year number 1 in a new defense. It won't be without Bradley Chubb. So for those factors, I think I'd still go with Von.
Okay, I like that argument, but here's my rebuttal there. It hasn't just been for 1 year from Von. We've seen the decline now for 2 straight years, and I take those sacks out. I'm not even worried about those stats. I'm going with what my eyes saw.
Sure.
And you too. You we talked about it yesterday.
Yep.
You saw it too. 2 years ago, it just wasn't good enough. You know, there needed to be a little bit more oomph 2 years ago, and last year more so. So to me, it hasn't just been, you know, the 1 year dip like you know Khalil Mack. I've seen a slow decline the last couple years in Von. And, you know, that's, once again, these are just the facts. So that's why I'd prefer to go with the younger Shaq Barrett that, to me, is on the rise. Now, do I expect him to get the, you know, what was it, 19 and a half or whatever it was,
yeah.
Sacks?
Yeah, 19 and a half.
Again, this year, no, but... I just can't go with the history of Von. And I like the argument, hey, I'm going with greatness and greatness will return with Von. I can go with that, with you. I'm going with more recent history here. And I thought I was going to see a bounce back this past year because 2018 just play in and play out wasn't good enough for me from Von. And you heard Vic talk about it, you know, you heard John talk about it this year at the end of the season. And so I thought it was going to be a bounce back year in that regard from Von Miller. And it wasn't. It got worse. So that's why, for me, you know, he's got to realize it. And I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have a lot left in the tank. I don't know what it is. But it sometimes it has me scratching my head when I watch him play the way that he plays.
With the
lack of, you know, sometimes you want to call it lack of intensity. Sometimes you want to call it, playing, you know, sometimes it's patty cake with the linemen and not going after the quarterback hard enough. All those things I've just seen it continually decline. And so I'm just going off the facts. And those facts tell me that, you know, I was hoping to see that bounce back this past year. Why am I going to see it this next year?
You are speaking the truth, okay? When asked this question on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, yesterday. I'm sort of banking on, and I'm not like down on Shaq Barrett. Don't get me wrong. I'm a huge fan, and I think that he's going to have a long career and continued success. But in both these cases, I think that Shaq will return to more of the player that he's been, and that's that his stats that he put up aren't sustainable. And
he's going to have that Brandon Stokely return to reality. You know, had that 1,000-yard season, 10 touchdowns, and then, you know, hey, after that, you know, it's just back to, you know, 400, 500 yards, right? That's what you're saying?
Well, yeah.
You wanted to say it.
Like, I look at a guy like Bruce Smith, okay? Bruce Smith is where Von Miller wants to get. Bruce Smith is, in my opinion, the greatest pass rusher of all time, along with Reggie White. When Bruce Smith was 31 years old, the same age that Von is now, for whatever reason, his sacks went down. It was just 10 sacks. And I know 10 sacks is still a great number, but you're talking about the all-time sack leader. He played in all the games, but it was just 10 sacks for whatever reason. By the time he's 33, so years after this point, he's back up to 13.5 sacks with 90 tackles. The year after that, he's 14 sacks. He's first team all pro. So I don't want to, even though we can be critical of Von, and we should be because it's warranted, and we talked about it yesterday and we'll continue it here today, it's warranted, but at the same time, I don't want it to be like a sweeping indictment of who he's going to be because there was factors working against him. And I don't know what was working against Bruce Smith in 1994 when he was 31, but the factors that were working against Von in 2019 are real factors, and I don't want to just ignore them. But just the same way as I don't want to ignore him not beating guys off the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Like we're hearing from PFF, like he doesn't win off the line of scrimmage like he used to.
He doesn't. Those are the facts.
He doesn't. And my biggest problem with Von Miller has been the lack of relentlessness, the lack of the fire, the pants on fire type of play.
He's not diving into piles.
He's not.
You know,
hey,
if his teammate's got a guy up, he's not. He's just kind of watching them tackle the guy.
He's there.
Right?
He's there to sack the quarterback. He's not there to stop the run. He's just not. He's there to get to the quarterback. He's told you that 10 different ways, 10 different times. So. I disagree with your answer to the question, but your answer to the question is not only in bounds, it's right at center court. I just happen to I'm banking on the other side of it.
Okay, here's my question for you. Who has more sacks this year? And sacks can be lucky, they can not lucky. Does Shaq Barrett come back to reality and you know 7-8 sack season, and does Von, you know, all of a sudden get back to that 13-14 number? Who has more sacks in 2020? Von Miller or Shaq Barrett?
That's a great question right there, partner. But you know what was crazy about Shaq's season? That early in the season he took the league by storm.
Yeah.
And after three games, he had 8 sacks. It's one of the highest accumulations after 3 football games. But by the middle of the season, the league is on to him. Did you know that Shaq Barrett had one game in the back half of the season where he didn't register a sack? Every other game, he registered 1 sack or more. I see 1 sack, 2 sack, and it was week 17. By the time that he's a defensive player of the year candidate, he finishes with 3 sacks against the Atlanta Falcons. So it's not like, oh, the book's out on
right.
Shaq. Shaq Barrett plays like his next meal is on the line. And I tell you what, if Von Miller played with the same sort of DNA that Shaq Barrett played with this past year, he would not have finished with 8 sacks. I refuse to believe that because he's way too talented. So
who has more sacks this year?
Von. Because I think Von's been humbled. I think Von has been humbled. I think this past year was probably the hardest year of football. Forget pro football. The hardest year of football that Von Miller's ever had to go through.
Yeah. Yep. I think you're probably right. Besides the injury that he had that one year when he tore the ACL. Besides that, I think you're spot on. You know. And you watch his play, and you watch just the different things that he was going through this year for whatever reason. You know, he gave the teary response at the press conference that made it all about himself after the loss. Remember that?
It crushed my soul.
yeah, I didn't like that one. No need to do all that stuff. It was unnecessary for me. The stretching by himself, the press conference during, you know, his weekly talk or whatever, gave us nothing. And he didn't play very well. He didn't get the sacks that he wanted. So obviously a lot of things going on there with him. So can he get this thing back on track? That ultimately is the question.
I'm banking on it. I know we're both rooting for him, and I've said this to you probably 50 times in the years that we've been doing the show. I like betting on greatness when their back is against the wall. And to a certain degree, Von Miller, and I know his back isn't against the wall like financially or as a pro, because he can have another 8-sack season. He's going to play the next year. So I don't mean it like that. But when it comes to the level of greatness that Von Miller has played at for years at this point is now in question for the very first time. And I think that Von Miller hears those questions. I know he sees it on social media. I know he reads. I know he listens. And Von cares, and he should. And I would be doing the same stuff if I was in his position. But I'd also be the most motivated of my career the way that I believe Von is right now, because he hears from John. I mean, forget social media and listening to someone like me. He heard from John Elway, like the guy who signed him, the guy who drafted him, said into a microphone, "Von needs to play better." And if he was sitting here in my office, I would tell him that. He hears all of this, so he knows he had a down year. If there was a stock on Von Miller. People are starting to sell the shares. I think there's another run coming, and I will gobble up those shares. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. This was a really fun week. It's been a blast to come in here and do it with Stoke. I know there is a lot of stuff happening in the world right now. There's a lot of stuff happening in our country, a lot of stuff happening in our city right now. And we hope that when you step into our arena, you are here with us and sort of forget about what's going on. We acknowledge what's going on. We care about what's going on. But we stick to what we do here, and it's what we did today. And we're going to continue to do that. Guys, be safe. Stay healthy. Stay sane. I hope you have a great weekend. God bless you. Steven, have a great weekend. Thank you for a great week. And we throw it to our guys, The Drive, coming up next.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.